this novel is that Phillips is free from drawing characters that represent some fundamental truth about the African-American female experience. The Quinns are not stoic and unyielding in the face of adversity. They are by turns mad as hatters and mad as hell. They love each other like crazy, and they love each other like they are crazy. At the root of their sadness and fury lies the legacy of slavery that has left them warped, but also strong. This story is intriguingly idiosyncratic. While the Quinns are steeped in the details of the place and time, they are not like anyone else you will know in real life or in fiction. Tolstoy was right. Every unhappy family follows its own rules of discontent. The Quinns are products of a breathtaking imagination, and their experiences reveal a novelist who is a master of plot. This novel comprises grand occurrences, both in the lives of the Quinns and in the course of history. But at the same time, the quiet daily markers of ordinary life propel the story to its dramatic and deeply satisfying conclusion. Tiny pieces click into place with every chapter, up until the very last page. Dolores Phillips is a heartbreaker and a heart mender. In the days of Zora Neale Hurston, the folks who sat on southern porches spinning yarns were said to be lying. So in that vein, Phillips is a liar who can clobber you with the truth of a young girl's heart. When I learned that she passed away in 2014, I regretted that I had never met her. I was also weighted down with longing for the other books that she would never write. But perhaps this is selfish of me, and even disrespectful of the great accomplishment, this, her one brilliant novel. The Darkest Child is a great gift, a timeless American treasure. Tayari Jones, 2017, Atlanta, Georgia. Chapter 1, Pakersfield, Georgia, 1958. Mama washed the last dish she ever intended to wash. I alone witnessed the event in silence. It was on a Friday, a school day, but instead of sitting in a classroom, I was standing in unfamiliar surroundings, the home of my mother's employers, stunned by the wealth around me. As I watched my mother through unwavering peripheral vision, something in her glances at me seemed to say, "Tangie Mae, this will be your life. Grab an apron and enjoy it." Domestic servitude was not what I desired for myself, but she had only to speak and I would do anything she asked. It was my obligation to obey her, though I did not want to be like my older brothers, Harvey and Sam, who seemed to breathe at our mother's command. They were men, and so their lack of initiative disturbed me, although I knew they could not just leave our mother's house. Departure required consideration of consequences and a carefully planned escape. At the age of 35, our mother was tall and slender, with a head of thick reddish-brown hair. Her face, with its cream-colored skin and high cheekbones, beneath dark gray eyes, was set off by a gleaming white smile, accented by dimples. I thought she was beautiful, despite my acquaintance with the demon that hibernated beneath the elegant surface. She had worked 7 years cleaning house for the Munford family. Now she stood at their kitchen sink, holding a dish under running water longer than necessary, before handing it to me to wipe. She finally dried her hands on her apron, took a seat at the table, and waited for her pain to subside. She had spent most of the day complaining of her misery while instructing me on the proper way to make a bed, scrub a floor, polish silverware, use a washing machine, and so on. According to Mama, her pain, something like gas, had begun during the wee hours of the morning. It balled up in her chest, rolled through her stomach, between her thighs and into her knees. It did a slow dribble in her swollen ankles. Then just like that, her finger snapped, it bounced back to her chest and started all over again, taking her breath away. On the table, beneath a crystal salt shaker, was an envelope.